Good evening again. Thank you, everyone, for choosing songs that went along with this. So if you want the punchline, if you invest in God and He returneth, you're going to get the best return. So thank you, everybody. Have a good night. I do want to talk about investing tonight, not in the way that you might think. I know we've got some investors in the audience. Hopefully you've got a 401k started. If you don't, maybe you will by the end of the lesson. I don't know. What I want to talk about is how we invest in our God, how we invest in one another, and how we invest in ourselves. What an investment is an allocation of something that's worth something now for a greater return later. We invest in all kinds of things, all kinds. Money, let's think financial right now. We put money aside now for more money later. Stock market, 401ks. We invest in kitchen remodels, bathroom remodels. Alan, what gives you the biggest return? Kitchen, bathroom, investing in your home, right? You invest in what gives you the greatest return. Cars, not an investment, unless you got one of the first Ferraris ever made that's only going to go up in value and you've had that sucker on blocks or it's pristine. That is not an investment. When you buy a car, that's the most that thing's ever going to be worth, for the most part. We invest in our health. Have you ever looked at your pay stub and see how much of your pay goes to health care? How much that doctor bill costs? How much the health of your family costs each month? In January, we all invest a little bit more in our health, right? We drop that whatever fad diet it is, and we buy the books, we buy the shakes, and we make that investment. But I don't really know why, because I've never had a return on that long term, personally. We invest in rest and relaxation, our entertainment. We spend money on movies. We spend money on going to see sports. Leisure. We spend money on education. A lot of money is spent on education. But what for? For the greater return 10 years down the road, 12 years down the road, whenever you get done with school, the hope of that return, that you can serve this world we live in better because of your education. We invest in those things. What about time? Let's stay right there on our education. Spend a lot of time in educating. You give up years of your life. You know, I'm not a doctor, but 6.5 years on the Dan Galloway plan is not all that great if I'm not going to get a better return on that. Other people go to school for 8, 12, even more years, depending on what their education level and their occupation are. Sports. I spent half the day yesterday on the soccer field watching a wad of 5-year-olds follow a ball all together around the field. And they went from sideline to sideline and not from goal to goal. I found that very interesting myself, but I don't know about soccer. And that was only a couple hours. There are those in the audience. I know that the Byers family invests a lot of time in Evan's sports career. I mean, he's going places, right? And there's value to that. He's playing for UK. My goodness. It's kind of a big deal. But have you ever calculated the hours? No. It'd probably take more time than the actual time invested. I don't know. But the value was there for Evan. Investment in him for a greater outcome later. You better go pro, Evan. That's all they're thinking. I'm kidding. So we allocate our time with the hope that we will get something positive in return. I get great joy out of watching Ella score a goal. Great joy. It was awesome. there's not always that return. There is risk involved in investing. In 2008, 2009, we saw the housing bubble pop. Great risk. People who had invested millions, thousands. We all saw those of us who had any kind of 401k or anything tied to the market, you're looking at thousands go down the tube like that. All because of, there's a lot of things that added to it, but because of people investing in the wrong things and people putting items out there that weren't good investments. They were very risky. Didn't make sense. What brings the biggest return sometimes gets you in the biggest trouble. There's actually many instances where investors saw the market indicators of what was getting ready to happen a year or two in advance. And they created they made short investments. So they bet on the housing market, basically, to fail. They're not working anymore. They're doing all right. They're betting on those risky investments to fail. I promise I'm getting somewhere. Their allocation of something, their finances, had a great return because of the downturn, because of the economy, and because of the soundness of their investment. So we invest in all kinds of things: stocks, health, people, retiring, vacations, entertainment, education, for one reason: to get a return on the investment. Right? You're seeing a theme. I've said that at least five times now. We're not going to invest in something that doesn't give us a positive return, are we? Look around. You're here tonight because you expect to get a positive return for the time that you are investing right now. You're here because of that investment, that hope that you are going to get a return. Now, I'm not saying that we're all just here to get something. That's not my point. We're here to either get a return. There's a reason why we're here. And that's where I want to park it. I want to talk about the positive returns we will receive, how to invest in ourselves, how to invest in one another, and lastly, how to invest in our God. I know that's kind of backwards, but I'm going to work up to God. Let's talk a little bit about investing in yourself. God did. God invested in you. You're worth it. All right? You're worth it. Open your Bibles to Acts chapter 8. Acts chapter 8. Take a look at verses 26 through 31. 26 through 31. This is the account of the Ethiopian eunuch, Philip, going to him, being moved by God to go help this man. Verse 26. Well, let's start in verse 25. And so when they had solemnly testified and spoken the word of the Lord, they started back to Jerusalem and were preaching the gospel to many villages of the Samaritans. But an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, "Arise and go south to the road that descends from Jerusalem to Gaza." This is a desert road, in case you didn't know. It's got it right there. Desert road, not a lot of reason for anyone to be out there. All right? And he rose and went. And behold, there was an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who was in charge of all her treasure. And he had come to Jerusalem. He, an Ethiopian, had come to Jerusalem to worship. And he was returning and sitting in his chariot and was reading the prophet Isaiah. So he left worship and continued his study. And the Spirit said to Philip, "Go up and join this chariot." And when Philip had run up, he heard him reading Isaiah the prophet and said, "Do you understand what you're reading?" He said, "Well, how could I unless someone guides me?" He invited Philip to come up and sit with him. He invited Philip to come up and sit with him. So we see what the eunuch had done. He went to worship. He left Jerusalem with something to chew on. You know, I don't know if he went to Jerusalem with this scroll or whatever Isaiah was written on. But he came back reading that. Regardless, he was reading outside of worship, doing what he could on his own. He read, period. He didn't understand what he was reading. I don't know the tone of the eunuch's voice here. But I think he was okay with being asked, "Do you understand what you're reading?" Well, honestly, how can I unless somebody breaks it down for me and translates this sucker? He asked for help. He also did the inviting. Notice that. Philip didn't force his way onto the chariot. The eunuch said, "Come into the chariot. Teach me the word." He acted on his time at worship and teaching from Philip. And he believed in the Lord and was baptized. Action. So what can we take from this example to get a higher return on our investment here? When the rubber hits the road, how do we get the most bang for our buck? You and God. You get a higher return when you go to worship. If that's not the case, there is a malfunction. So do your fellow investors. Your fellow members. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Don't leave this building like the eunuch left. Don't leave this building without an application to make in your daily life. If you need to invest your money in new reading material, go for it. Maybe that's what the eunuch did. Maybe he had it already. Investing takes an allocation of something that has value. Remember that. And he read the Bible outside of the assembly, outside of his worship. We need to involve others in our study. We need more perspectives than just our own. I'm never wrong when I'm talking to myself. I'm the best. But when I'm talking to others, how quickly I realize, hey, that is a great point. I've never thought about it that way. Keep it coming. Take what you've learned and act on it. If you would turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. We'll just read one verse. Verse 26. "Look at the birds of the air, that they do not sow, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they?" You know, I heard something kind of catchy on the radio about this verse. Excuse me. I said, yeah, it says, look at the birds of the air, and God takes care of even them. But God doesn't have a shovel, and he's not dropping worms into the nest. I like that. I like that. It takes us all to have return on our investment. We can't expect God to know that, let me rephrase that. We can't expect to acknowledge that God will take care of us and us not go out in the morning and hunt for those worms. From the example of Philip, from that side, he went to the eunuch and gave him what the eunuch needed. Notice the eunuch didn't come to where Philip was. Philip went to where the eunuch was. Right? We all go to where each other are to make our investments. God came to us where we are with shortcomings, with faults, to make his investment. I've talked a couple times about the R.J. Stevens Singing School, and Tim Stevens tells this story every year. This is R.J.'s son, and he said they were starting a new work, small congregation, not a lot of song leaders, and a big burly Marine that couldn't carry a tune in the bucket came up to him and said, "You know, I appreciate your hard work. I want to help out. I want to lead singing." You could just see Tim, anything but that, you know. But Tim went to where he was. You know, I talked to the guys about blowing the dough, the younger men, and this is what happened in Tim's case. "All right, you blow the dough." He blew it. "Dough." "All right, you're a little bit low. Try it again." "Dough. Dough." Could not hear it. Could not hear it. But what Tim did, he said, "Okay, here's the dough. Dough." Tim's doing this, teaching the individual who couldn't carry a tune in the bucket, went down to his level, right where he was, dough, and brought him up. Brought him up to the note he needed to be on. All right, now when you match my voice, follow it. Dough. And from that point on, he could hear. Imagine that. Imagine what we could do when we can come to each other's level, wherever you're at, and follow the example of Christ coming down to our level, wherever we're at. Murderers, prostitutes, sexual sin, whatever it may be, drunks. He comes down to your level. Can we not do that for one another? Come down to each other's level, wherever you are. What encouragement do you need? To do that, we need a relationship. Start investing in people wherever they are. Build them up from there. Let's let that catapult us into investment into others. Turn in your Bibles back over to Acts chapter 10. Verses 36 and following. I think that's right. Is not. What chapter was the account of Dorcas? Thank you very much. Sorry about that. Adam, edit that off the podcast if you don't care. Acts chapter 9, verse 36. Thank you for your graciousness. So Peter's traveling in the area of Joppa, Lydda, and has made some real headway, if you will, in this region. In verse 36, "Now in Joppa there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which translated in Greek is called Dorcas. This woman was abounding with deeds of kindness and charity, which she continually did. And it came about at that time that she fell sick and died. And when they had washed her body, they laid it in an upper room. And since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, having heard that Peter was there, sent two men to him, entreating him, 'Do not delay, come to us.' And Peter arose and went with them. And when he had come, they brought him into the upper room. And all the widows stood beside him weeping and showing all the tunics and garments that Dorcas used to make while she was with him. Look what she meant to us. Look what she did for us. But Peter sent them all out and knelt down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, 'Tabitha, arise.' And she opened her eyes. And when she saw Peter, she sat up. And he gave her his hand and raised her up. And calling the saints and widows, he presented her alive. And it became known all over Joppa, and many believed in the Lord." So what did Dorcas do, Tabitha, to invest in others? First off, she was a disciple She was a follower of God. I don't know how long she had been a disciple. She certainly had traits of a long-term disciple, if you will. She saw and heard what God had done and changed her life to do the same. That's what disciples do. That's what followers do. She used her talents to invest in others. She didn't try to be something that she wasn't. She used her talents, her clothing-making abilities, and her kind deeds abounded. She took the time with the people that she helped. If it was just a gift, they wouldn't have come back. It's like now when you go visit people, you might take something, but it's not the something that you take that those people care about. It's you. It's the time you invest. She took great time. Her good deeds, her kind deeds abounded. Abounding means great quantities. Her charity also abounded, overflowing, abounding. She was generously helpful to others, and they allowed it. It's important that they allowed that. She served others and filled in the gaps for the widows as best she could with her companionship. She invested her time and her money. I wonder what Dorcas's thought process was. And when I lay this out here, I have had this thought process in time or over time at some point. Maybe when I'm a little stressed out, things are coming a little bit difficult to me. This is taking so much time away from my business. This is taking so much time away from my family, if she had a family. This costs so much. This person's super annoying. I only go over there because I put my time in. Check, check, check. If I do this once, man, I'll have to do it all the time. I don't get that impression, though. I see genuine love for the Lord and therefore genuine love for her neighbors. So how do we invest like Dorcas did? We're a disciple. We act like Christ. We use our talents for good of others and for good of God. We do kind deeds in an abounding way. That is hard. It is hard. It's hard to do kind deeds for your own family sometimes. And these kind deeds are happening to numerous widows within her purview. We serve others from where they are again. We have a responsibility to fill in those gaps of the people in need and be ready to give your time and money for good and encouragement to others. And you all know how tight I am, so I said, yeah, put it in the budget. There is going to be cost associated with investing. Put it in the budget. Turn over to Luke chapter 3. I'm not going to read this, but open to Luke chapter 3. And look at the genealogy of Jesus, verses 23 through the end of the chapter. Come on, just look at it. Have it ready. Think about God's investment in us. You know, a lot of the songs were about that tonight. And what happens for those who have invested. What had to happen for us to be saved? I can't really fathom the time, because time wasn't in existence before creation, but in the same way we think of it. How long had God contemplated this creation, knowing that sin would be present and He would provide a sacrifice for that sin? Now, he probably doesn't call Jesus into the office and say, you know, I've been thinking about, creating a universe. What do you think about that? Yeah, that sounds pretty good. You know, it won't take long to mess it up. They're gonna sin. Okay, what are we going to do about it? Well, you're going to be the sacrifice. Okay. But that way they can be good enough to spend time with us through the rest of eternity. What a great investment that he made in us, knowing the cost, knowing the time, knowing frustration. God saw that everything, including humans, was very good on his creation. Then sin occurred. Well, let's look at our salvation. Over and over, God invested and doubled down for Israel. You know, he preserved Israel all through the scriptures. He's preserving us today through his Son. God saved you by preserving that from the beginning, from the flood. A remnant remained. From the Egyptians, salvation was provided. The Assyrians, Babylonians, everyone in Jesus' lineage had to be preserved. God would have found a way. And he did. Look in verses 32 and 33 of chapter 3 there in Matthew. The son of Jesse, the son of Obed, the son of Boaz, the son of Salmon, the son of Nahshon. Now remember the battle of Jericho. Rahab was Boaz's mom. The lineage had to be preserved. Herod killed all the boy babies in Bethlehem and its surrounding areas. Under two. All through Jesus' ministry, people were trying to kill him, or contemplating killing him, creating plans for killing him, and he continued to slip away. All the things that had to happen just right to make this investment that God had in us go just right. God sacrificed and had patience. Remember, investing is an allocation now for a profit later. God saw the allocation of his Son as a good investment in us. Can you believe that? It makes me feel like $1 million just to hear that, since we're speaking financials. For the potential return God would receive. Yeah, he's thinking about us. But we're God's inheritance. We're his 401k. He wants us to be part of him in his eternity. This forces us to make a decision. I don't know if you've ever had this in your relationships with folks, but if you buy someone lunch, they feel indebted to you to buy you lunch down the road. No. Does that happen? I got my first taste of this. Maybe Dad, maybe Hogan. But I bought Dad and Mom's lunch one time when I had enough to do that. And, you know, it's like heaping coals on Dad. It's like, what do you think you're doing? You know, buying my lunch. No, I got that. I said, no, I got that. You know, this constant battle of repayment and paying them back. You know, eventually we just said, let's quit this. You got yours, I got mine, we'll just call it a day. It makes it easy on everybody. There's not as much stress as involved, and you don't give me death eyes across the table when I do it, and I don't give you death eyes across the table when you do it. We'll call it a day. But the only way we can pay God back is by deciding to serve him and investing in him. You know, there's no way we can quantify Jesus' life other than that. Now, this in turn causes us to invest in one another. So when are investments made? We've got good markets, bad markets, money, no money. If you would, look over in Genesis chapter 41. Genesis chapter 41, verses 25 through 37. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven thin ears, scorched by the east wind, shall be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt, and after them 7 years of famine will come. And all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of what subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. And now let Pharaoh look for a man, discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of produce to the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. And let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish during the famine. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. You invest when times are bad. You invest when times are bad for the greater return. In 2008, 2009, who was throwing money into the stock market? It's kind of hard to bring yourself to do that, but I bet you're doing all right now if you did that. Buy low, sell high. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 10 and 12. Then it shall come about, when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you a great and splendid cities, to give you great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant. And you shall eat and be satisfied. Then watch yourself, lest you forget the Lord who brought you from the land of Egypt out of the house of slavery. Times are good. Continue investing in the Lord. Don't forget. Don't forget who gave you these things. Don't forget who gave you these returns, if you will. Have you ever got out of a bad investment? There's no more returns. There's no money left. I don't have anything else to put in to this investment. My finances, my resources are exhausted. Empty. You get out of a bad investment when there's no return to be had. So what is the return for God and for us? Well, when you think about it, it's love. Love is the return of investment. People get out of bad investments when they don't feel loved. God gets out of his investment when he doesn't feel love. Remember when he divorced Israel? Total rejection. Let's read 1 Corinthians. Not the entire book. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, 1 through 13. Very well known passage. If we speak with tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. Does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Does not take into account a wrong suffered. Does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, and hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. But if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. If there are tongues, they will cease. If there is knowledge, it will be done away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away. When I was a child, I used to speak as a child, think as a child, reason as a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know fully, just as I also have been fully known. But now abide faith, hope, love. These three, the greatest of these is love. Sometimes I forget about investing in the greatest things. I get so caught up on the happenings of the church here or the happenings in my life that I forget about the one greatest thing, love. God's investment in us with the hope of that love. Well, thinking back to Matthew chapter 23 when they're talking about the smaller things that they get in the way. You know, I don't want to focus on necessarily the tithes of mint and cumin. And are we forgetting to clean the inside of the cup? You know, when I was a kid, I looked at this finger. I sliced my finger open down to the bone. And that was before they had fancy stitching and that kind of thing. So I've got a Frankenstein stitch up right there. So when I went to the nurse, she didn't sew it up right then. Imagine that, right? We know better than that. She cleaned the inside. Got down to the root of the issue. Cleaned that inside up. Then stitched it up. Then allowed that to heal. You know, something I really didn't appreciate that's just coming to my memory right now is that she scrubbed my cut so hard. I said, man, I remember jerking up out of the water. It's painful. The inside of the wound was addressed so healing could begin. So we invest in God first. I'm going to work my way back. We invest in one another. We invest in ourselves. You know, I was talking to Gary the other night, and he had this image of a triangle of a husband and a wife and God. When the husband and the wife are not focused on God, you see this. And I liked when he did that. I didn't like that he did that, but it made an impact on me because we see how strife can happen in a marriage when the focus is not on God. So here we are. Is our focus on God? Are we investing in the Lord? Invest where you are able, from where you are and where the individual is, where others are. And don't let a bad market scare you from investing. Think about the returns made when you invest when the market's down. And take care of the largest investment, God, love, first. And allow the wound to heal. Don't forget to invest in love. That is the example we're shown in Christ. God allocated His Son with the expectation of a great return. There is risk in investing. But the rewards can be great. The rewards can be great. And that's what God is hoping for all of us tonight. Open your psalm book to number 814. I hope this has been profitable for you. I don't know. It's been good for me to talk about investment in God, because I have not been doing that to my full capacity. And I'm sorry for that. And I want to invest more and more. And my eyes need to be on God to do that. So if I'm stepping on your toes, I guess I'm stepping on your toes, but nobody in particular but my own. And I hope your patience with me tonight continues. And if you have any need tonight, I ask that you let that be known to anyone here. We want a relationship with you, and we want us all to be healed so that we can come back stronger and take our strength from the Lord and share it outside of these walls. If you have any need, come forward as we stand and sing. Number 814.